The following is a Hoop Ball presentation.
What is going on? It is the Hoopball Clippers podcast coming at you on a Saturday afternoon after the Los Angeles Clippers are on life support, but they slowly are coming off of life support with a win over the Dallas Mavericks in game number 3. Of course, it wouldn't be a weekend without Justin Wilson, LA Clippers film, joining me on the podcast. Justin, how are you feeling right now? Because I know last night took a lot out of me.
It took a lot out of me, too. I was pretty exhausted. That was an emotional roller coaster. But, you know, the season was on the line. And, you know, I couldn't have been more proud of the way that we responded. So, you know, exhausted, but, like, even more excited for game 4. Because whoever wins game 4 will probably win the series. And so as big as game 3 was, and the Clippers did some things that that was pretty encouraging. So as big as game 3 was, game 4 is even bigger. So looking forward to game 4. Tired, but like, you know, ready to get even more tired tomorrow watching it.
I think you're spot on there. I really do think that whoever wins tomorrow wins the series. If the Clippers go down 3-1, I don't think there's any coming back from that. Obviously, they had it done to them with Denver, but I just don't think that it'll happen. And if the Clippers are able to win tomorrow, I would assume that means the adjustments have been made and that Dallas most likely is not going to be able to win 2 of the next 3 against the Clippers because, I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum on Twitter and just in general about the 3-point shooting of the Dallas Mavericks. And at some point, you would think it's going to come down to earth. I was talking to Adam Oslin on Twitter yesterday, and I said to him, you know that if the Clippers lose to Dallas, that Dallas is going to go and face Utah, if that's their matchup, and they're going to go and shoot 30% from 3. It's just the way things work. You know that's going to happen, considering that Dallas was not a great 3-point shooting team during the regular season, and all of a sudden they're going crazy. So it's just one of those things, man, where you're hitting Dallas at the worst possible time, because they're not missing a damn 3. They were 20 of 39 last night, and they lost the game by 10. It's just hard to fathom how the Clippers got a win with their opponent making 20 threes and shooting over 50%. It's wild, man. I can't believe it.
Well, you got to, for one, I think the winner of game 4 wins the series because Dallas has already won twice on the Clippers' home floor.
Yeah.
So, I think if it's the series is 2-2, it just doesn't seem likely to me that they'll win 3 games. The Clippers will lose 3 times on their home floor. I just don't see that happening. So, I don't know. That's how I kind of view that. But yeah, man, the 3-point shooting in this series for Dallas has been like, you know, they're shooting like 20 percentage points better than expected on open shots. So even if the Clippers defense was like drop dead awful, which it hasn't been, they are still massively overperforming on their 3-point shooting. Like, they are shooting 50% from 3 in the series, and the Clippers defense hasn't been the greatest, but it hasn't been like high school level bad, which is what it would have to be in order for that to be like the reason why the Mavericks are shooting so good from 3. So like, for me, it's just been about getting on the board so that you can extend this series long enough to where regression, even just a slight regression, can come into play. Because if the Dallas Mavericks are shooting 40% from 3, which would be a drastic uptick from what they did in the regular season, just 40% from 3, and the Clippers are probably the ones up 2-1 right now because they're getting an all-time series from Kawhi and Paul George, and their offensive efficiency has been a little bit better than what it was in the regular season. But the Clippers are an elite offensive team, and they are an elite 3-point shooting team. Dallas is not the greatest three-point shooting team of all time. You know what I mean? Which is what they're performing at right now. So hopefully by starting in game four, we can see some sort of regression, and the Clippers can start to build some separation from this team.
I'm going to be giving some stats throughout this podcast, and we're talking about three-pointers. And this one is from Justin Russo, who did an incredible job picking up some of these stats at FlyByNight on Twitter. The Mavericks on three-pointers this season. In the regular season, on tight to very tight contested three-pointers, they shot 30%. They were 88 of 291, so they were 30% on tight to very tight contested. In the postseason, they're at 50%. So that is 20 percentage points greater than what they were in the regular season. In open to wide open threes, which obviously, wide open threes, you would assume that they're going to make. They were at 37% during the regular season. That's not great. You'd expect them to probably be a little bit better, so maybe that 30% is a little low. In the postseason, they're at 50.5%. That's over 13 percentage points greater than what they were in the regular season. So to state the obvious, Dallas is overachieving from three. It is very hard to make a shot in general in the NBA. You don't really have many guards or many forwards that shoot threes that shoot over 50%. It just doesn't happen. In general, 50% from the field, and that's including layups, that's including jumpers from within 7 to 9 feet. But to have a 50% mark from three, it's incredible. And there's a lot that we can talk about when it comes to Dallas's three-point shooting, Justin. But it really does seem, and it could be very simple. You just got to hope that they start missing, because they're overachieving. They're shooting greater than what they did in the regular season, and you're just hitting them at the wrong time. Is that correct?
Partly. Here's another stat for you. Tim Hardaway Jr. shot 39% from three in the regular season, which is fantastic. He had a really good shooting year. He is shooting 65% from three on 8 attempts a game through this series so far.
Wow.
That is astronomical. That's crazy. He is 15 for 23 in the series. And like, Tim Hardaway Jr. is not taking like spot up wide open threes. He's coming off of pin downs. He's shooting from like 25 feet. So like, some of these threes, you just can't, there's nothing you can do about them. Like, you know, I know everybody was jumping on Zoo and for his defense on Luka, but like, Luka did, I clipped a play of Luka hitting a three on Nicholas Batum the same way. Some of these threes are like, yeah, whatever. Like, there's nothing you can do about them. But there are some things that the Clippers can clean up in regards to Dallas's shooting as far as like overhelping. I do think that as we continue to get better offensively, I thought game three was by far and away our best offensive game. You kind of saw that, especially in the fourth quarter. As we get better offensively, we make their threes feel a little bit more pressure. And I felt like yesterday was the first game in the series where we kind of brought pressure to the series. Dallas was playing free and easy the whole entire time. And I think that as we move to game four, you'll see more of that. Just bringing that added element of pressure into the series could maybe invite some variance and some regression. And I just think in general, while there isn't anything we can do about some of their threes, I think the best we can do is two things. One, we can control what we can control, which is like, if Porzingis is posted up against Paul George or whoever, there's no need to help there. By helping, you invite an open three. And as we've seen so far, Dallas is making those open threes at an astronomical rate. But we're shooting ourselves in the foot when we help for no reason. So being cognizant of making sure to stick to the game plan, which is to make Luka a scorer, which is to make Kristaps Porzingis a scorer one-on-one. And if they are scoring one-on-one, so be it. But you don't want to overhelp, leading to open threes to their shooters. And number two, our offense. Our offense is, in a lot of ways, our best defense. And when our offense is clicking, we're the best offensive team in the league. And that alone makes offense for the other team harder.
So we got a question on Twitter from your boy Young Trill, and he asked,
hey, that's my guy.
And he asked a question. He goes, what were some notable defensive adjustments you saw in game three? I got to tell you what I saw, and Mike Fratello obviously pointed it out, and he did on several different possessions, and it's very obvious, and it seemed to make a difference, and I want to get your take on what you thought about the Clippers doing this. They have been switching every single time whenever Reggie Jackson or Pat Beverly was being put on a screen or something like that. Whatever it took, they were getting switched, and they were getting killed. So finally, the Clippers decide to do a hard show with Reggie Jackson where he would double on the ball, put his hand up, go hard, and then back up so that it avoided them getting Reggie Jackson on Luka or on Jalen Brunson. It worked really well. Dallas did score a couple of times when that happened, but I thought that the looks that they were getting were much more difficult when they were doing that. What are your thoughts about that?
So I think this is kind of a tricky point, because I don't think the Clippers throughout this series have wanted to put Reggie Jackson on like Luka Doncic. I think in a perfect world, they would have loved to have showed on Luka hard like you saw in game three. I say that to say, that's not necessarily a new concept. It's just that they executed it really well in game three. And I think part of that was because Luka Doncic started fading down a stretch. He was getting fatigued.
And he's hurt, by the way. Now that we know as we record this podcast, he's hurt and he's questionable for tomorrow. So definitely injury had something to do with it, but continue.
Yeah, so for a variety of reasons, you would see Luka Doncic try to use Reggie Jackson's man as a screener. Reggie would show, and they'd stop. Then Luka would try once, and then once he saw that Reggie Jackson didn't willingly switch, he'd go to something else. And so credit the Clippers. That is something that the Clippers have tried to do. But, you know, showing and recovering is kind of hard. It's very hard because if Luka Doncic goes hard around that screen, then sometimes there's no choice but to switch. But you kind of saw, especially in the second half, Luka did not challenge Reggie Jackson's show. And so he kind of let Reggie Jackson off the hook in a lot of ways. But I just thought in general, the Clippers' defensive game plan wasn't all that different from games one, two, and three. In all honesty, I didn't see a drastic like change in game plan defensively. They went smaller a lot more, right? Like they kind of took Zoo out of the lineup. They didn't start him in the second half. He came out after just 3 minutes. So that's something that I'm interested in seeing, is if game four Zoo starts, because he didn't start in the second half of game three and he only played like one shift. So that's something I'm interested in seeing. But in general, I just didn't see a drastic difference in defense. What I felt they did do a better job is making Luka a scorer. That I still think they can do a better job in that regard, but they did hone in on that strategy, which is just let Luka score. We can win with Luka having big nights. It's the other guys that are going to kill us if we allow them to get into the game. And they still did. But going back to my earlier point, the Clippers' biggest asset in this series is their offense. The Dallas Mavericks cannot stop the Clippers, and they have no chance in hell at stopping the Clippers. And you kind of sorry for being long-winded, by the way.
No, you're all good.
But, like, if you watch, like, the beginning of the game, right, I think we were down, like, 11-0 or something like that. We got an avalanche of three-pointers, and people are pointing at the defense. And my retort is that he's making fadeaway threes. The problem was that in the beginning of the game, we were getting like offensive fouls. We weren't getting shots at the rim, and we were down 30-11. Like we weren't scoring. And so if you look at again in our fourth quarter, we were scoring the ball at an incredibly efficient clip. We were getting open threes from Marcus Morris, Reggie Jackson. It was really looking and feeling like peak Clippers offense. And so for me, the biggest defensive adjustment, if you ask me, was us getting our best offensive game of the series. And I feel like once we get into our automatics and once we start to really look like ourselves on offense, that alone will help our defense because that's better floor balance because we're getting good shots. If we're scoring the way we're scoring, that puts a lot of pressure on Dallas to make shots. And I think the added element of pressure can aid in speeding up the regression from the Dallas Mavericks. So for me, the biggest adjustment was that we finally looked like ourselves for the most part on offense, even if we had some outlier performances like at the rim. I don't think Kawhi and Paul George missed a single shot at the rim. Mm-hmm. But in general, like you kind of saw us finally like getting pick and roll action where like Rondo was getting into like the middle of the lane, kicking out. You know, Ty Lue has the phrase paint and spray, hitting the paint and then spraying out to our shooters. We finally looked like that. We finally looked like the best version of ourselves. And that to me was the biggest adjustment, not so much the defense. I don't think we did something too dramatically different defensively.
It's funny because normally you say that good defense will lead to offense. It's normally how basketball works. So you play good defensively, normally it'll lead to the offense. But this is actually the reverse, where the Clippers' offense is helping them because by producing as well as they are, they're putting pressure on Dallas when Dallas has the ball, which is making the offense for them a little more difficult because they can't be as free-flowing when each possession means something. So yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I'm glad you actually brought that up. And the Clippers' offense has obviously been really good, and this is when I'll bring in some more stats. Shane Young at Young NBA on Twitter, who wrote a great article, by the way, on Forbes. So go ahead and check it out. I'm going to bring up some stats a little bit later from that article. But to tell you what the Clippers are doing in this series, their offensive rating in the half court is the best in the playoffs right now. They're at 115.2, which is outstanding. At the rim, they're shooting 74.5%, floater range 52%, long twos 55%, three-pointers, non-heaves, they're at 36%. Dallas is at 53.5%. Wide open threes.
That's the series.
Yep, that's the series. Clippers wide open threes, 38.3%. Dallas, 58.5%. 20%. Jesus. 20% better on wide open threes. And then frankly, where the Clippers have gotten lucky is that Dallas has missed a lot of free throws. In this series, the Clippers are shooting 85.5%. Dallas is at 66%. Luka has started to put himself into hack a Luka territory. He's been really bad. If he's going to go ahead and make one of two or not make either, you're better off fouling him than letting them shoot and make a three on a possession. Because guess what? Three is greater than one or two. And a three gives you a hell of a lot more momentum than making one free throw. So it's getting to that point. It's not going to happen, but it's getting to that point where things are getting silly with Luka at the free throw line that very well could happen. So the Clippers offense has been really good. And we talk about defensive adjustments, and it brings me to an adjustment that was made before the game even started, Justin. And we were trying to figure out who was going to be in the starting lineup. And we knew that there were going to be changes. We just didn't know what. I speculated initially that would be Reggie Jackson and Nick Batum for Morris and Pat Bev. Turns out it was just one of those. It was Reggie Jackson for Pat Bev. Clippers Twitter was not thrilled when they found out about that news. But I got to tell you, man, when PG and Kawhi were the only ones that were scoring, the Clippers needed a third option. And until the fourth quarter, that option was Reggie Jackson, man. I got to give some credit to Reggie Jackson and what he was able to do in the starting lineup. I know you were not happy with him starting. What were your thoughts after watching a game of him in the starting lineup?
So I still think that, like, on aggregate, I don't know how I feel about, like, Reggie Jackson. It's not so much starting. It's that he's playing, like, this is his second consecutive game of playing 30 minutes or more.
Yeah.
Which is just a ton of minutes for Reggie Jackson. I would love if, like, maybe, like, that gets chopped down a little bit and you could, like, give some of those minutes to Nick Batum, who I wish could play more, and you give a couple of more minutes to Rondo. Mm-hmm. But in general, you know, I don't think there's any question about Reggie Jackson's ability as a shooter. He has turned himself into a dynamo knockdown shooter, and that has value. That definitely has value. And one thing that Reggie Jackson has that, like, you have to give credit to is that he's not afraid. He's not afraid. And, like, when you get into these moments, you kind of need somebody with some juice with the ball that can do some things and is not afraid. And that, to me, was like one of the biggest reasons why we were able to stem the tide. I think when Dallas came out on fire, Reggie was the one who kind of broke the seal for us with like a rack attack, and he went right to the rim. And, you know, the defense is probably where it's going to be most concerning. And it's kind of like Russian roulette. You know what I mean? Like, this, the sample size of a playoff series is so small that, like, you may be able to get away with Reggie Jackson if he's shooting well enough. Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately what it comes down to, right? If he's making shots and if he's making good decisions on offense, you can live with the defensive ineptness. If he's not, then, you know, you have to adjust. And I was talking with a friend earlier today, and I said, when it comes to evaluating coaching, right, they are going to make decisions that you either agree with or don't agree with. That is far less important than whether or not the coach will adjust if it's not working. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, like, if what happens if Reggie Jackson is blowing like three straight assignments, or if Luka Doncic is actively seeking Reggie Jackson and it's not working? Is Ty willing to adjust? And I think he is, right? He adjusted with Patrick Beverley, and I think he adjusted with Zoo at halftime. Mm-hmm. And so that willingness to adjust supersedes everything. And that's the biggest thing that I was optimistic about with Ty. And he showed that in the in game three, in the biggest game of the season. But for me, yeah, I am a Reggie Jackson fan, especially of his shooting. I'm just not a fan of his defense. And I don't know how I feel about Ty Lue leaning this far into the Reggie Jackson experience at, like, what did he play, 34 minutes last night?
Yeah, he played 34 minutes. Yep.
Yeah, that's listen, if I told you, like, let's just say, like, 3 weeks ago, that I told you Reggie Jackson would play 34 minutes, yep, way more than Zoo, way more than Rondo, way more than Pat Beverly, way more than Terrence Mann, way almost as much as, like, Marcus Morris. Like, if I told you that, we would be like, what the hell? You know what I mean? And so if we're fortunate enough to get out of this round, I do wonder how that is going to work itself out, because Reggie Jackson on the floor is going to be a defensive liability every round. But, you know, he shot 40% on threes on high volume last night. Mm-hmm. And that is the trump card, man. And the shooting is legit. The shooting is legit, and his fearlessness is legit. And those things you'll roll with every time.
Yeah, and he made both of his twos. It's crazy, because if you were to find out that Reggie Jackson played the most minutes of any guy not named Paul George or Kawhi Leonard, he was tied with Marcus Morris for 34 minutes, you would be thrown back against the wall and you fall down and not know how to get back up. I mean, it's one of those things where it's wild, but if he's able to make the shots that he made, and he hit a couple of big ones that really helped the Clippers when they were making their run, because they needed somebody to make a shot. And there was a time where he missed a wide open three, and I was like, God damn. I'm like, those are ones that you need to make. I mean, he missed one, and Marcus Morris missed one that they make. And it's one of those things where you got
to
make it.
So glad to see Marcus sort of bounce back game.
Dude, too. So big. The Clippers don't win if Marcus Morris is shooting the way that he shot in games one and two, because he's getting those open looks in the corner. He just wasn't making them. And so finally, he's able to make them, and he scores 15 points, 6 of 9 from the field, 3 of 5 from 3. So just absolutely massive. And it's funny because you bring up the halftime adjustment. I don't think, and I could be blowing smoke out of my ass, but I'm pretty sure with about 95% confidence that if it wasn't for any injury, I don't think Doc Rivers ever made a change at halftime and started something different than what he started with at the beginning of the game. Normally it's one of those things. You go with the five starters that started the ball game to start the third quarter. But Ty Lue said, you know what? Screw it. Zoo is not working. And to your point, he made the sub early on in the first quarter after he saw Zoo getting roasted again on Luka. And again, like you said before, they're not easy shots that Luka's making, but it's the process and the ability that Luka knows he can get that matchup, and it gives him confidence. If you're able to show him something different, that is what I want to see. Because I know what you're saying in that they're difficult shots that were being made initially to get them that 11-0 run, but you got to show them something different because they're getting comfortable. They're starting to see and know what's coming, and it's just giving them way too much of just ability to stay comfortable on the perimeter.
This is like, and so obviously with it goes without saying that like Ty Lue has forgotten more basketball than I know.
Yeah.
So that goes without saying. I just like, you know, I had a tweet when Luka started the game like 4-for-4 from three, and I tweeted, make him score 70.
And I responded, he's going to, and they're going to lose.
Yeah, like, and he didn't score 70, but he scored 44 points, yeah. And they lost.
Yeah.
Which is the gist of and the spirit of what I was trying to get at, which is that, like, you know, when he's going off like that, right, that's not going to kill you. What's going to kill you is that if you don't, your offense is bogged down and you're getting offensive fouls and turnovers, right? Like that's what was killer. Like he rushed out to like an 11-0 run to start the game. And like the real issue wasn't that like he was making tough threes over Zoo. It was that we had 0 points.
Yeah.
And he went 3-of-9 after going 4-of-4 from the 3-point line from that point on. And two of those threes came when the game was basically already decided. And I just think that, like, that's the model. That's the model that we're going to have to lean into moving forward for game 4 and game 5 and hopefully game 6. We can win with Luka Doncic going crazy. Like, we can win, and we've proven it time and time again over the last two series against the Mavericks that we can sustain Luka, a hot Luka night where he scores 40, 50 points, because it's more important that our offense is in order and that we check everyone else. We check everyone else and make sure that they're not scoring. So, I say all that to say, I don't know if I would have pulled the plug on Zoo that quickly. But honestly, like, it was an elimination game and you kind of can't risk it. Right. So like, I'm not mad at Ty Lue for that, but like, if we're fortunate enough to get past this round and if the Jazz are our second round opponent, then like, you definitely can't take them off the floor then.
Right.
And that's Rudy Gobert. So I guess that's a bridge we'll cross if and when we do get there. But in general, I'm just of the theory that if someone is taking like fallaway threes over a 7-footer contested, if that's the best offense that Dallas is getting against us, then long term, I'm not sure that you can win like that. And once Dallas finally, which hopefully will start in game 4, once they finally start regressing, once the role players finally start regressing from three, then you'll really see how hard it is to win a game off of Luka Doncic step back threes. So I just, the thing about Luka, he has this trait that's like not quantifiable. His threes feel more demoralizing than they actually are.
Yeah.
At least in my opinion, like they feel like, oh my God, we got to do something. He's 4-for-4 from three. And it's like, you just have to stay the course, man. Like it takes a lot of courage to stick with the game plan in the face of adversity. And for me, that's where I lean to. To wrap up my point, whether Zoo is in the game or not,
yeah,
it's more important that we stick to the game plan of making him a scorer, make him score 70 points, make him score 60 points on us. It's more important that Tim Hardaway Jr. doesn't go 4-of-6 from three again. Maxi Kleber doesn't go 4-of-7 on three again. That's more important to me than Luka Doncic doing whatever, because like 40, 50 points is not enough to beat the Clippers, especially if our offense is humming and we can get whatever we want against the Dallas Mavericks. Mavericks. That's one of the biggest revelations through the first three games as well.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But to put a bow on your point, I think that in a logical sense, what you're saying makes perfect sense. And you're spot on. Not to overreact when they're taking a fall away three over Zoo. But in a small sample size, and this was a must-win game, you had to do something different to show them something different so that they weren't looking at the same deck of cards every single possession. They're looking at something a little bit different because they had confidence knowing, oh, Zoo's on the floor, and there's something within them that they were able to take advantage. And Luka was able to make those shots. I know they were difficult shots, but you had to do something different and you had to get your body into them. That was the biggest thing that I thought the Clippers didn't do defensively. They weren't getting into the guys. Terrence Mann came in. He said, F you. And he's pushing and shoving. Marcus Morris.
Love me some Terrence,
dude, Mann. Absolutely. I mean, these guys were showing some energy and getting into the bodies. Forget shooting over players. Get into the bodies and frustrate them. And that's what they did. Before we go forward, though, the Clippers are -3 if you look at the odds for tomorrow's game. That means that Vegas thinks that the Clippers are going to win by 3. If you think that's going to be a winner, I know where you can bet. MyBookie.ag. Their rep is rock solid. They've got the best odds, contests, and promotions in the business. Whether you want to bet on NBA playoff basketball, NHL hockey, in the playoffs, whether you want to bet on college football when that starts back up, the NFL, whether you want to play blackjack, they've got everything going on. If you want some help also, you can help the guys at the Hoopball Gaming Department. They do a tremendous job. Devin heads up that department. Sign up, enter the promo code Hoopball. Get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. Enter the promo code Hoopball. Head over to MyBookie if you want to add a little excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. Bet with the best. Bet with MyBookie. So, before the game, Law of the Athletic posted, or he constructed a tweet that I found was fascinating. And he said, I wonder what happens to Pat Beverly's minutes. Now that Reggie Jackson is starting, you know Rondo's going to play, and you know Mann's going to play. And you look at the box score, Pat Beverly played 6 minutes. He did not play in the second half. It is crazy, Justin, that we are sitting here after the Clippers just beat the Mavs in a do-or-die game 3. And frankly, the two players not named Kawhi and Paul George that we thought were the two most important players in the roster combined to play 17 minutes in this game. Zoo played 11. Pat Beverly played 6. What did the Clippers do about Pat Beverly going forward? Because he was picked on defensively, which is something you never think you would see with Pat Beverly. His offense, he had 2 points in 6 minutes. It's a really small sample size. He missed his open 3. I just think that if Reggie Jackson's playing the way he is, Terrence Mann has to get minutes now with the energy he's giving you. Rondo has to get minutes. There may not be a place in this series for Pat Bev. What do the Clippers do with Pat Beverly if you are Coach Ty Lue, Justin?
I think you do exactly what you did in game 3. There's no time to mess around. I think Pat Bev is clearly not himself. And I feel like he's clearly not confident in his shot. Dallas isn't even guarding him on his shot. And like, you know, this is what's being a team player is all about. If we're able to make a deep playoff run, at some point we'll need Patrick Beverly. And it may not be in this series, right? The best route towards winning this series may be for Patrick Beverly to be a rotation guy who comes in because of foul trouble or something like that. Otherwise, he doesn't play. That may be his role. And that role has value, right? Everybody has value. It's all about being a part of a team and being a part of something that's bigger than yourself. And credit to Pat, I saw a quote in which he told yesterday, he told Ty Lue, whatever you need me to do, coach.
Yeah.
And he was very much so engaged and like, you know, same with Zoo. And like, I think Ty Lue said Zoo was one of his favorite players to coach. And that's what the playoffs are all about, right? Like, it's never going to be perfect in the playoffs because teams scout you, teams know your weakness. You play these teams over and over again. So at a certain point, they know everything you're going to do. And so you have to be malleable. And part of being malleable is like taking guys out of the rotation that just aren't working. And I think unequivocally taking Pat out the rotation was the right move. You just can't play that many guards anyway, especially small guards, when Luka Doncic is playing 40 minutes a night. And the evidence was clear that on both ends of the floor, this just wasn't a series for Patrick Beverley. So kudos to kudos to Ty for making that adjustment, because what seems easy to us, like just take somebody out of the lineup, there are relationships, there's interpersonal locker room dynamics that are at play. And it takes a lot of courage and gumption to go up to someone who's been your starter to say, you know what, I don't think this series is for you. I'm going to go in another direction. And it takes courage on both sides to make that work. So kudos to Pat, kudos to Zoo, and a big shout out to Ty for like all everybody. Just it's a team.
That's the one thing about this Clippers team. I mean, there's obviously more, but there's one thing that really stands out with this team versus last year's team. Everybody just gets along in the locker room. It's harmonious. They're playing for each other instead of just playing for themselves. And it's always been a, all right, you need me to sit back and sit on the bench, Reggie Jackson? Oh, you need me to start now if you're Reggie Jackson? These guys are accepting of their role. And I've been saying all season that the one big difference between this team and last year's team is everybody has a role. And in this case, if you're not going to play in a game, you're going to be ready if your name is called in the next one. And that's one thing the Clippers have done so well this season, time and time again, that no matter what, this team has players that may not play in one game, but they're sure as hell ready to play in the next game, or in this case, the series after. And so that, I give credit to Ty Lue. That is very much man management as part of a head coach. And he does that very, very well. So kudos to him. I'll be curious to see what happens tomorrow, because Pat Beverley played 6 minutes, and I think he's just a little too wild and reckless for this series. We'll see what happens. We'll see if Luka plays. I'm assuming Luka will play, but just one of those things where you got to make a decision. And supposedly, Ty Lue is going to stick with the same starting five that he went with yesterday. And if that's the case, then a big decision is going to be made pretty early with Zoo. And if he's the Zoo that you saw in the third quarter that was blocking shots and getting rebounds and getting offensive rebounds, more importantly, and fighting like a bully down low, that Zoo can play in this series. But if he's the Zoo that is not getting rebounds on the defensive side and is not making his shots when he gets the opportunity because he was one of three yesterday, then that Zoo doesn't have a place in this series. So I'll be curious to see how short the hook is on him.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, the hook with Zoo is going to be determined by whether or not Luka Doncic wants to shoot like Luka Doncic or shoot like Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. That's really what it boils down to. And like, unfortunately for Zoo, there's not much he can do about that. Like, right, like Luka Doncic through three games is I'm going to pull it up right now because I don't want to mince my words here. I want to be as exact as possible. But Luka Doncic through three playoff games against the Clippers is shooting 46% from three on 12 attempts a game.
Yeah,
that is literally Damian Lillard, Steph Curry territory. And I don't know if they can even do that. And so We get on Zoo talking about how this may not be his series, but like, man, that's insane. And so I guess like if Luka Doncic misses, then Zoo can play. And if Luka Doncic makes it, then, you know, that'll put pressure on Ty to adjust. But we'll see. I think at this point, every game, you're going to have to assume that Luka Doncic is going to shoot like a regular human. And if he doesn't, then you adjust. But, like, he's on borrowed time, man. This is insane. Like, this is literally, like, an outer body experience. He's a great player, but he shot 35% from three this year. He shot 31% from three last year. These threes are contested too. So, like, you know, Zoo's minutes are going to be tied to whether or not Luka Doncic wants to be Steph Curry or not.
You know what the 7 for 13 is for Luka? When I say that, yeah, 7 for 13. You would say, yeah, shooting from three, right? How about it was right. Also his freaking free throws. He was 7 of 13. The guy is shooting as well from three as he is from the free throw line, bro. That doesn't happen. It's just one of those things where a good, and you tweeted this yesterday, a good 3-point shooter is not that garbage from the free throw line.
It's, thank you.
At
thank
some you. Point, it's got to even out.
Thank you. Like, and that's how you know that, like, and I don't mean this as a slight to Luka Doncic.
No, not at all.
That's how you know, but that's how you know these first three games, at least that part of his game has been a fluke,
yeah,
right? Like, he's making insane shots at an insanely efficient clip.
Yeah.
And that's why it was so important to give for the Clippers to win yesterday. That got us at least two more games. And one of those two games, Luka Doncic is going to come back to earth. And him coming back to earth is still elite, but like, this is insane. He's like, he's Superman right now, you know? So
yeah, and then you look at the role players, by the way, and you mentioned it earlier. Tim Hardaway Jr., 4 of 6. Maxi Kleba, 4 for 7. Brunson, 4 for 6. And Dorian Finney-Smith was 0 for 3. I mean, 3 of the 4 guys shooting well from 3, you would assume, yeah, 2 out of the 4 would do well. But when 3 out of the 4 do it, it's crazy. I want to bring up a couple other lineups that I thought were interesting from what was in that Forbes article that the Jackson, George, Leonard, Batum, and Morris lineup got 12 minutes. They were 11 of 16 from the field. That's good. That's really good. However, that lineup was outscored by 8 points in those 12 minutes because Dallas did not miss a shot. So Shane said that's one of the lineups that Shane put in his article. It's crazy because that goes back to Zoo, where you can shoot as well as you can, and if you're giving up points, then you're screwed. But the difference with Zoo is that the Clippers weren't scoring. And so because of that, that's why Zoo was taken out. And then the other lineup that, and this will kind of transition into my next point, the Rondo, Reggie Jackson, which, by the way, Ty Lue said he didn't like when Reggie Jackson, or actually, no, it was Pat Bev. He didn't like when Pat Bev was on the floor. I think it was with Rondo. He's with Rondo, Jackson, Leonard, George, Morris lineup. The Clippers surrounded Rondo with 4 shooters. That lineup was 7 of 8 from the floor and outscored the Mavs by 8 points. And that brings me to what happened when that lineup was on the floor. What happened was when Rondo was the point guard and he was the one setting the screen for Kawhi, that opened up a flurry of options for the Clippers offense. I'm assuming you saw this. Shane did a great breakdown, putting the plays in his article for Forbes. That offense, how sustainable is it for the Clippers to continue to do that? And I want to ask you, as somebody that's played the game, how easy will it be for Dallas to make the adjustment on the defensive end there?
It won't be easy at all, and that is sustainable. Whether they make or miss, that isn't sustainable. But what you saw with Rondo playing out of a small, we call that small pick and rolls. That's something that Ty Lue has been preaching all year, and that's something that they've been working on all year with their guards to set real screens so that they can force that switch, which forces a chain reaction of sorts. And Rondo did an excellent job of actually putting his body on a defender to make contact to set that screen. And you don't want to leave your small guard on Kawhi Leonard. So you fight over, but fighting over allows Kawhi Leonard to pass that ball to Rajon Rondo. And now Rajon Rondo has the ball in space and somebody has to commit to him. And that's what creates the chain reaction. So it's a really smart way to take advantage of Rajon Rondo's lack of shooting, right? In games 1 and 2, Dallas didn't really honor Rondo off the ball. So the Clippers smartly put Rondo involved in the action in the form of a screener. He's basically a center in those scenarios, which sounds weird to say about Rajon Rondo. But like, yeah, he was basically the center setting the screen, rolling, and then making plays out of short roll. And that's very sustainable. And that's a big reason why the Clippers had the best offense in the NBA. And ultimately, what's most sustainable about it is that that lineup, especially at the end of the game, can defend. Right. Rondo is a plus defender. Marcus Morris, you can get away with, is a plus defender. Obviously, Kawhi and Paul George are plus defenders. And it's ironic because on the other end of the floor, Dallas is going to look to do the same thing. It's basically just matchup hunting where Jalen Brunson is guarding Rajon Rondo. You're trying to get Jalen Brunson on Kawhi Leonard. Dallas doesn't want to do that. So they kind of trap the screen, and that leads to an open shot for us. On the other end of the floor, they're going to try to do the same thing with Reggie Jackson. So it's a matter of being able to not get screened and then make contact on the other end. But to answer your question, I think it's very sustainable because the Clippers have high IQ vets. They have a ton of shooting around Kawhi and Paul George. And it's just one of the more it's one of the hardest plays to defend in a league when you have that much shooting on the floor, with which the Clippers do, because the moment you put two on the ball with Kawhi Leonard, you're cooked because Marcus Morris is in one corner, Paul George is in another corner, Reggie Jackson is in the slot, and it's just like it's shooting everywhere. And that's what, and Rick Carlisle actually commented on it today during his presser. It's a really hard play to defend. It's simple. But when you have that much shooting around, essentially Rajon Rondo, it's really tough to defend. Definitely sustainable.
Yeah. Before we go forward, because there is one more thing I want to talk about. Father's Day is just around the corner, and you probably need a gift for a hairy dad. Make your dad proud this year. Get him and yourself the Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right. Lawnmower 4.0. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code HOOPBALL20 at manscaped.com. I know you've brought out those scissors before. You've made yourself bleed, whatever it is, whether it's cutting your neck, whether it's cutting below the waist. Why mess with something that could be easily fixed? The fourth generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. How is the Lawnmower 4.0 different from other trimmers? Upgraded trimmer includes a multi-function on-off switch that can engage in a travel lock. It's a great feature if your father or yourself do a lot of traveling. Also, the 400K or 4000K LED spotlight, you can use that on and off. Of course, you've got the wireless charging safe system as well. Manscaped products are cruelty-free, paraben-free, dye-free, and vegan. Get 20% off and free shipping with code HOOPBALL20 at manscaped.com. Once again, get your dad a gift you know they will use. So, Justin, we have now gone 47 minutes on this podcast, and we have not sung the praise of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Those two in this series have been absolutely, positively sensational. What the two of them have done, continuing time and time again, there are people that are saying, well, wait for Dallas to drop off and their shooting to cool down. The one thing you got to be careful of on the Clippers end, Kawhi and PG are not going to shoot as well as they have every single game. Kawhi, 13 of 17 yesterday, 11 of 18 for Paul George. That is 24 of 35. That is not sustainable. I know they're very good, but those are not sustainable numbers. But that being said, Paul George, screw your pandemic P storyline. Screw anything you have to say about Paul George. The dude is a baller. And Kawhi Leonard, I saw you going back and forth earlier today about people comparing him to Luka. Folks, the Clippers
unintentionally went viral too. By the way,
did it really? For that. Oh, I didn't even see that. That's so funny. That's hilarious. Folks, Kawhi Leonard won that series last year. Kawhi Leonard was damn good last year, and he's damn good this year. Let's sing the praise of those two guys. You're on the floor. Go ahead and sing the praise, Justin.
Well, I'll start by saying, I mean, ditto to what you said. They've been sensational this entire series. And really, the story of the series has been that while Luka Doncic has been sensational, so has Kawhi and PG, the difference has been that the Clippers role players haven't really been all that hot, while the Dallas Mavericks role players have been like literally historically great. That's the real difference why this series is where it is right now. And the role players finally came alive for the Clippers in game three. But yeah, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George have been exceptional. And they what's on their plate is so tough. They've have to play at least 40 minutes a night. They have to be high level defenders, and they also have to put the team on their back on the offensive end. And I just can't say enough about them. And it's especially impressive with the way that they played. Like, the Clippers were down 30-11, and they could have let go of the rope last night, and they didn't. They showed true leadership, and they showed a true metal that, like, a lot of people questioned about this team. A lot of people didn't think that they had that depth of, like, fortitude. So that was impressive. And, you know, you said that their efficiency wasn't sustainable, and it's not. It's not, right? But what is sustainable is their style of play. And I think what's more important than whether or not the shots go in, you saw that Kawhi and especially Paul George, they've put a real emphasis on attacking the rim. Paul George, I think, especially towards the second half of the season, he set a career high in like drives per game, and it's bleeding into the first round of the playoffs. And he and Kawhi are just attacking the rim relentlessly. And that's why Paul George is shooting like 50% from the field for the series, even though his three ball has kind of abandoned him a bit. And if I told you 2 months ago that Paul George would be shooting 23% from three in the first round of a playoff series, we would all think like, uh-oh, that's not good. But on the contrary, he's been phenomenal because he's adjusted his game over the course of this season, and he's kind of become a player that's like just fantastic. He's attacking the rim with such force. Him and Kawhi Leonard, I can't say enough about him. And moving forward, that development is a championship level development, especially if we're able to get out of this round, because Paul George, with his handle and his size, he can get to the rim damn near anytime he wants against anybody. And so that level of force is something to be reckoned with. And he and Kawhi playing their part will give us a chance in any game against any team. And you have to have comfort in that. So kudos to them. They've been splendid. There's not much else you can like say about them. I think Kawhi Leonard has been a little bit messy off the ball defensively, but that's kind of hard to pick because the load he's carrying offensively is so great, and the minutes he's playing are so high that, like, you know, you expect some slippage. But all in all, A+ performances this series from both of them, and they're the reason why I went out on a limb like way before yesterday, saying that this series was going to come back to LA 2-2.
Roll the dice, baby. You put your name behind it. You said, roll the dice, baby. 2-2 going back.
I was rolling the dice. I was betting that the series would come back 2-2 because I didn't see Dallas having an answer for Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. They didn't have an answer last year. They don't have an answer this year. They've shown their cards. There's nothing they can do to stop Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. We can't stop Luka Doncic either, but there's a high probability that at some point he'll stop himself because he's not a Steph Curry level shooter. And once that happens, we got the series. So Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, I can't say enough. I'm grateful that they are Los Angeles Clippers, and I look forward to them carrying us through this playoff run.
Yeah, listen, if the Clippers come back and they end up evening this series, you're the one that was the first one to have confidence in this team, okay? I got to admit that going down 2-0, I did not have a ton of confidence in this team, so I'm giving this to you, no doubt about it. You have been on top of it from the get-go, so I'm giving you credit. The last thing that I want to hit on before we say goodbye, as we look ahead to game four, any big adjustments that you think either team needs to make, specifically for the Clippers, obviously, since this is the Hoopball Clippers podcast. Offensively, I thought they figured everything out, especially towards the end of the game. We talked about it in depth, especially with Rondo being a screener and just continuing to need to make shots, whether you're Marcus Morris or whether you are Rajon Rondo or you're Reggie Jackson. And defensively, you just need to hope that they kind of cool down. And like you said in the beginning of the podcast, your good offense will lead to better defense because they'll put more pressure on them each possession. So anything else that you think the Clippers need to do?
The Clippers don't have to, they don't have to do anything spectacular. This is not prime Golden State. The Dallas Mavericks have one playmaker who's making a lot of tough contested jumpers. You keep it that way and make sure your offense is in order and you should be fine. It sounds like an oversimplification, but it's not that deep. Like the Clippers were down 2-0 in part due to some historic shooting. They don't have to have some fancy adjustments. They just really need to hone in on their game plan discipline and make sure that they stay home on shooters and force Luka into being a scorer, and on offense, just be yourself.
All right. Well, listen, I love having you on. There's no doubt about it. You are the best that there is, man. Justin Wilson at LA Clippers Film on Twitter. Love having him every single time he comes on this show. Game 4 tomorrow night. Hopefully we see the Clippers come out and even things up, tying the series at 2 apiece. Justin, always appreciate you having you on, my man.
Thank you, my brother. Next time I'm on, hopefully we'll be talking about the Clippers going into the second round against either Utah or Memphis. Go Memphis, by the way.
So until next time, I'm Brandon. He's Justin. This has been the Hoopball Clippers podcast. Have a good one, everybody.
This has been a Hoopball presentation.